Welcome to Manager Tools. The Manager Tools Data Feedback, Part 1. This cast answers these questions. What are the data Manager Tools has gathered about delivering feedback? How have you gathered data about how to deliver feedback? How did you develop the Manager Tools feedback model? Well, if you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening. Here we go.
Folks, if you're a listener, but you're not part of the broader community, we don't know who you are. Maybe we don't have your email address. I promise we don't send a lot of email out. You're missing out on a lot of stuff. Probably the most important thing you're missing out on is a chance to be a licensee. It costs $200 a year. If you sign up now in our 15th anniversary, which happened to occur slightly after the dawn of COVID in 2020, we have added some additional benefits to our license to try to show solidarity with how many of you have been struggling to keep your job or to find a job because of the economic downturn associated with governmental responses to COVID. And so you will get our interviewing series. And I like to tell people the interviewing series costs $150 if you buy it by itself. So the $200 license, if you get the interviewing series, is now worth $350. You also get our resume workbook and effective relationships as well. You should know that on our 16th anniversary, we'll be announcing a new standing licensee product. And some of this will change. But nevertheless, I think you can assume, wink, wink, that the interviewing series will still be included in it. We're doing our best to add value to the licensee product to make more of you motivated to become licensees so that we can serve you well. I hope you'll consider becoming a licensee. Thanks.
Dude, this is, you know me. I like data. I like data. I like talking about data. I like looking at data. And we have a lot of data about feedback.
We do. Yeah. And yet I have a feeling that some people won't be satisfied, even though this cast at the large print that I print my show notes out at so that I have a reference as we go through everything, it prints out at 54 pages.
Yeah, strap in, folks.
Yeah. I'm sure that I'll get questions about, well, okay, in this study, how many directors versus how many managers were there? And we're not going to go to that level of detail, but we will cover the vast majority. We will cover the vast majority of the results of the studies that we did, managers giving feedback to their directs. We will. Yeah. I mean, we've been doing this, you know, we did it for 17, 18 years and tens of thousands, now over 100,000 managers and their directs. And we believe that's one of the reasons why our work has stood the test of time, as opposed to just glomming on to every sort of cultural managerial guidance, whether it be millennials are different or you have to have people. There was a time when it was, you have to have people of the same race leading teams and so on. And we have data on all that.
If you're new to the show, the great thing, just know what's coming is you'll find out that if you don't feel comfortable managing or you haven't managed a long time or you don't think you're good at managing, there are not a lot of things you need to do to be effective. Right.
Breakdown
into just a couple. It's so amazing to me that if you consider the performance of a manager and the things you might think you need to know or things you might need to do, i.e. behaviors, to be successful, like 75% of it boils down to just a few. It's pretty exciting for those of you.
Well, I've been using the analogy lately of the Tetris effect, right? The old game where blocks in different shapes would fall from the sky and you would have to manipulate them, turn them, rotate them, and also slide them left and right to get them to fall into order so that they would make horizontal rows that they wouldn't disappear. And there were times when you got just the right piece, and if you turned it just the right way and slid it into just the right slot, a bunch of rows would disappear all at the same time. And I call that the Tetris effect, right? And I say to people all the time, if you're trying to solve a problem in your organization, in your team, and you've tried a couple of things and they don't really seem to work, or they do something, but you still haven't gotten to where you wanted to be, it's probably because you're focused on the wrong thing. You can solve a given problem. Listen, there's always problems. Every team has problems, thousands of problems, okay? But if you pick the wrong problem and you solve that problem, but the thing you were hoping for doesn't really get better, it was the wrong problem to focus on. And what I've told people lately, I said the Tetris effect is when you start solving the right problems, you notice that other things happen. You get these knock-on effects, these additional effects where, you know, I'm starting to do one-on-ones now and I feel like I have more time. That's right. You do, because you're probably not being interrupted as much.
That's right.
You know, I started doing one-on-ones 4 or 5 months ago, and suddenly, you know, when I introduce a new idea or something, people are leaning forward rather than immediately pushing back. That's a knock-on effect. That's the Tetris effect from working on the right thing. And you mentioned it's very few things. And the top two things that managers can do, where you get all kinds of additional effects, positive knock-on effects, are working on trust, you know, getting to know your people, which is what our one-on-one tool is for, and talking about performance in a way that's effective for people. And that's why we have our feedback model.
There you go.
Yeah.
So what's the outline today?
Yeah, it's simple. So for those of you who remember several years ago, we shared our one-on-one data. We're going to do the same thing again. We're going to start with the Trinity derivation data. Okay. We want to lay that whole case out again. And then after we do that, we'll talk about the feedback model data, and we'll go through the history of how, at least at a high level, how the feedback model was developed. We'll tell you about our first effort and what happened and how big the study was and what we learned and what we did next and what we did next and so on.
Okay, so let's start at the high level. Let's talk about the Trinity data. And for new listeners, just really quickly, just tell people, just warn people, the Trinity has actually four things in it. So.
Oh my gosh, that's right. Yeah. I just know it has four things. Probably sooner or later in life, I'll assume that all trinities that I hear of in my life have four things. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's really bad that we're admitting that the Trinity has four things and sharing our acumen related to counting before we get into metrics. Yeah,
but since you brought it up and there are people who are listening for the first time, we'll share this with you. Folks, so the Trinity, our Trinity, has four things in it because of how management works. The original Trinity are one-on-ones, feedback, and coaching. And the reason those are the Trinity is they are the three most significant behaviors you can engage in. Going back to what I said earlier, you'll get Tetris effects out of doing these things. They make the biggest difference in results and retention. The watchwords, the fundamental measures of how good any manager is. It doesn't matter how much your team loves you. Look, we want your team to love you, but it doesn't matter how much your team loves you if you don't get results and you don't retain your people. That's what your CEO wants. She wants you to get results, whatever those are for your job, and she wants you to retain your people. Okay? Well, one-on-ones, feedback, and coaching, in other words, are tools for getting to know your people, talking about performance, and asking for more, are the Trinity. However, in the list, if you will, of the top 15 most effective managerial behaviors, coaching, and the fourth one on the list, coaching is third, the fourth one on the list is delegation, pushing work down. Now, we could have said, these are the top four, or these are the four pillars or whatever. But the reason we called it the Trinity was the first three, one-on-ones, feedback, and coaching, are the ones that benefit you and your team, your results, and your retention. The fourth one, delegation, actually has less beneficial effects on your team, but it has enormous implications for your organization. One of the things that happens in organizations is risk and decisions tend to float upwards. You've all seen it. I don't want to make a decision at this level if I can get my boss to make it, because that absolves me of being in trouble for the wrong decision. Well, that's actually really inefficient for organizations. Organizations need, if they're going to be profitable or achieve their mission, need decisions made at the lowest possible level, because it costs more to have decisions made at one level and work done about that decision implemented at a lower level. So because in the data, it shows that coaching and delegation are virtually equivalent. And even if the benefit of delegation is to the organization in terms of keeping the organization healthy, it is the manager who has to do it. And so it would have been foolish for us to talk about the management trinity, one-on-ones, feedback, coaching, and not talk about delegation. On the other hand, I didn't particularly like the phrase the manager tools, what it would be, quaternary, right? I didn't like that. I didn't think that would work. So there you go.
That's
how we've got the trinity.
Okay, so you can count. Okay, good, good.
Yeah,
Makes me feel better about the numbers we're going to talk about.
Folks, we get asked all the time for discounts for some of our products. And as a general rule, we say no. And the reason we say no is in part because there is a whole range of ways to use our products and services. And it starts with free. Virtually all of our guidance in one about effective manager, effective communicator, effective hiring manager, effective remote manager is available for free in our podcasts. And you can listen. And you can implement this stuff on your own. You could also get a license, and that would give you access to me. So as you're implementing things, you could ask questions of me and Kate and Sarah. You can also do it by video, which is not as expensive as coming to a conference. You can do it by virtual, which is, again, not as expensive as an in-person conference. And then you can also get trained in person. And then the last thing on the list is you could hire us to train a bunch of your managers if you're an executive. So there's a whole range, a whole series of steps you could go through. And so when people say, well, I want you to train me, but I want you to give me a discount, I'd say, well, no, then you probably need to look at virtual or video or a license or just listen to the podcast on your own. And we also say part of the reason we don't discount is because we like to say that our products are Tiffany advice at Walmart prices. We think we're priced fairly. So I hope you consider it. Thanks. Okay, so let's talk about the Trinity derivation data. We've learned, folks, that over the last 16 years or so, that anybody who wants to examine the data on the manager tools feedback model, having been given the data, will want to know all about the data and why we recommend feedback at all. So we're going to do a little derivation here so you understand. I gave a little bit of it just now, but look, the backstory here is long before manager tools, management science had pretty much concluded that there were 15 management behaviors that correlated positively with results from retention. 15. You can do anything you want, but there are really 15 that will make a positive, measurable difference. Now, by the way, management science had also pretty much concluded that the measure of a manager was, as I said, his ability or her ability to get results and retain people. Those are the benchmarks. And unfortunately, because the vast majority of managers have never been told that, it surprises people what they get knock-on effects from or where the Tetris effect when it happens. And it's because when you're working on the right things, those things have a positive impact on results and retention. Now, we said there are 15 behaviors. Actually, again, you can do anything you want, but those 15 behaviors corresponded essentially made up for 97% of our ability as managers to move the needle on results and retention. There are lots of other behaviors you can engage in that may have some effect or even, I like to say sometimes, affect on results and retention. But 15 of them really represent the vast majority of most of our abilities to get things done.
Yeah, you think you'd at least start there, right? Before focusing on that 3%.
Yeah. But here's the thing. Nobody tells you. Almost no manager gets told results and retention. And then no manager gets told, here are the 15 behaviors. Nobody even gives us, you know, choose one from column A, one from column B, one from column C. If they just narrowed it to 15, if more people knew this stuff, we'd eliminate all kinds of faffing about. It would just be much more effective. So, okay, so of those 15, it's not a random crapshoot, okay? It's not pick any one and they're, you know, any one of these
15. They're all not equal in weight.
Yeah, they're ranked from 1 to 15. Only 4 of the myriad behaviors a typical manager can engage in deliver greater than single-digit percentage contribution improvements in results and retention?
Only four. Oh, my God.
The four. Yeah. Okay. And think about it. Four out of 15 is roughly, you know, the Pareto rule, 80-20 rule. 80% of your results come from 20% of your choices. And so the top 20% delivers roughly 80%, or in this case, 75%.
You know, 80-20 rule. Okay. Yeah. So I'd want to know about those four, frankly.
Yeah, you really would.
That's just me.
And there'll be some people who say, no, I need to really study all 15. And,
yeah, okay.
You know,
all right.
Okay, great. Yeah, sure. Because you have unlimited time and you can do that. Or you can just say, hey, these are the things that over and over again in repeated management studies of results and retention, managerial effectiveness. I'd be willing to bet there's a bunch of people who are saying, they're still saying, wait, did he say 7, 8, 10 minutes ago that my team liking me, getting along, my team knowing that I love them is not the most important?
No, clearly that's got to be in the top four, right?
No.
No, really, it's not.
Okay. No. Yeah. Well, you know what that is? That is a manager saying, I'm going to do this job and it's going to be an extension of me. You know, this is what I would want to do. I would want my team to like me. Well, I mean, look, we don't have any problem with your team liking you, folks. We really don't. We want that to happen. But let's be clear. If your team likes you, there's not enough correlation to whether or not you're going to achieve results and retention. If you don't get results and retain your people, but everybody thinks you're the greatest person in the world, you're going to get fired. That's not what your CEO cares about. By the way, I've noticed in the last 10 years or so, CEOs will say a lot of things to make the external world happy. But internally, CEOs would say, you do understand that I have to say some things as a public figure, but privately, if you want to know what I care about whether or not you're doing your job. Now, I love you. I want you to be successful, but we're not here to make people feel a certain way in this organization. We exist to serve society. Society expects certain things from us. It's not cheap to do these things. And so we have to be diligent and deliberate about it. And we have to ask people to understand how the organization is structured. And we have to ask people sometimes to act outside of their comfort zone in service of our mission to our society. And too many managers don't understand this and don't realize that, yeah, there's been research done and there are certain behaviors that make a bigger difference. And I was about to say, it doesn't matter whether you like these behaviors or not. Actually, it does, because if you like them more, you'll do them better. And if you don't, you won't. But if you engage in these behaviors, you're more likely to do your job. The problem is too many managers say, well, that's not me. And they're not willing to pay the tax of joining the organization. Everybody, when we all join organizations, we pay a tax. And the tax is giving up some of your individuality for the benefit of the whole. You know, some of that tax for many people is communication. I don't like communication. Communication people say, I like to work on my own. Well, go start your own company then. But you can't join a company and expect to be not communicate. I tell people all the time, it's not going to make you effective just to do your work. You have to do your work and you have to tell other people about it. You have to communicate about it and you have to know the work of the people around you. Now, if you don't like that, that's okay. But you don't get paid to do what you like. You get paid to do what's effective. And what your CEO will tell you, what he or she knows is you got to get your job done. You got to achieve results, whatever those things are, whatever your boss has told you. Sometimes, maybe luckily enough, you'll be able to choose your own results, and that's a great thing. And then you also have to retain your people. So, yeah, those four behaviors, get to know your people, talk about performance, ask for more, push work down. Those are the four big behaviors in that order from 1 to 4. But look, would you rather focus on just four behaviors from which you will get Tetris effects that are likely to make up 75% of your leverage? Or would you like rather work on 11 other behaviors that could potentially drive 22% of your impact?
Four, please.
Four, please. Yeah, check, please. Or would you like to just search around generally and just faff about and see maybe you'll get lucky and stumble on something?
No.
Yeah. Look, you're a listener. The fact that you're here means you're interested in knowing more about being a manager, so you're smart. And you're so busy, you don't have time to work on all 150 or 80 or even 11 behaviors that don't get you much leverage, that don't get you a Tetris effect. You're going to focus on the four that get you the 75% of the way there. Now, you might go about it randomly until you learn that the top four most impactful behaviors a manager can engage in are not equally effective. And we've said it 1,000 times, and we'll continue saying it because we believe in Horstmann's law of organizational communication, which is say something 7 times and half your people will say they heard it once. And for those of you who have heard me say this 10,000 times and just kind of roll in your eyes, there are new people joining us every week. And so we want to make sure the foundations are there. The single most effective behavior a manager can engage in to improve results and retention. And again, argue all you want about results and retention, but that ship has sailed, folks. The single most effective behavior is getting to know your people. The data show that it represents 40% of the value of the top four behaviors and their contribution to results and retention. Nearly half of the value of the top four managers is contained, the top four behaviors is contained in that first one. It's a Pareto model within the Pareto, right? So to determine its overall value in terms of your leverage, you multiply 75%, the value of the top 15, times 40%, and you see that getting to know your people, to your point earlier, Mike, represents roughly 30% of your ability to move the needle on results and retention. There is one thing that accounts for a third, roughly, of your ability to get results and to retain your people. People who do more of this get more. People who do less of this get less. If you're not working on getting to know your people, on building trust — trust is the metric we use to determine how well you know your people — if you're not working on that, then if you're working on somewhere else outside of the 15 or in the top 100 or whatever they might be, and you don't have any impact on building trust, you're going to find it much harder. You're going to have to work harder in order to achieve the results you want. Now you may get what you hope to get, but if it's not aligned toward building trust, or if it's not aligned toward results and retention, you know, why bother? It's like, why buy a bike and have it sitting in your driveway and then walk everywhere? Oh, I bought a bike. Yeah, but you never use it. You know, you're not using the efficiency of mechanical leverage and energy and so on. I mean, I'll never forget the picture I saw in some atlas or something that showed a chart of the speed of a bunch of animals. And I think, you know, an osprey was the fastest. It was 70 miles an hour in one of its dives. And a cheetah was 40 miles an hour in a sprint or whatever. And a human running was like slow, nearly last. Slow. I mean, faster than a turtle, the tortoise, but not fast. Until the human got to build a bicycle, right? No animals are building bicycles. So one behavior out of potentially thousands amounts to roughly a third of our ability to get where we're paid to get. And look, that's powerful. And it makes it so much easier for managers. We don't have to pursue 15 or 20 different strategies or initiatives in order to make a big difference in our report cards. You don't. And look, the rest of the Trinity behavior cascades from there. Talking about performance, the second most important, represents 30% of the 75%. That means our two most important behaviors, getting to know our directs, building trust, and talking to them frequently about performance, represent 40% plus 70%, 30%, which is 70%. 70% of 75% of our results from retention goals. That means, do that math, slightly more than half, greater than 50% of our leverage around results and retention can come from focusing on only two behaviors: building a trusting relationship and talking about performance. Now, asking for more and pushing work down — this goes to your question about the Trinity — each represent roughly 15%. Asking for more actually it's easier to say 15% for both rather than 16 and 14, because that's a distinction almost without a difference, but roughly 15% of the value of the top four behaviors. That's roughly 11% each of our total ability to make a difference. And they are the last of the four behaviors that register in double digits. Now, look, guys, in case you're wondering, you think this is about our data. We're not talking here about anything relates to our data. This was science that existed before I started gathering data about the individual tools that we're going to use. This is well-established management science. And you'll notice I haven't really mentioned very much our tools, one-on-ones, feedback, coaching, and delegation. That's because the behaviors that management science has determined have the most impact on results and retention don't require you to achieve those behavioral outcomes using manager tools tools. You don't need to use our tool, manager tools one-on-ones, O3s, to get to know your team. You don't. You don't need to use our feedback model to give communication about performance. You don't need to use the manager tools coaching model to ask for more. And you don't need to use the manager tools delegation model to push work down. You can try almost any technique you'd like in these four major areas. Well, almost. That caveat is, I'm going to mention a caution here. Some of you have heard this, but I'll say it again because I see this all the time. Whatever technique or behaviors you do engage in, and I encourage you to be creative if you like, if that helps you stay engaged in your role, as long as you're making a difference on results and retention, whatever you do must be teachable to other people. That is to say, it must be communicated, be able to be communicated to somebody else so that you can teach it to somebody else so you can groom a successor for your role.
Right. Makes sense. As managers, we're all teachers in some regard, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I know I'm going to get an email about drinking coffee because it's 6 a.m. on a Saturday morning and I need some coffee. Yeah, because what happens is managers say, well, you know, I work for some really outgoing, energetic guy. One of our classmates, Mike, Alex Gorsky, the chairman and CEO of Johnson & Johnson. There's a profile of him and their new one-shot COVID vaccine and in-depth interview, I think, in the journal. And, you know, if I worked for Alex is a pretty outgoing, friendly, cheerful guy. He, even at school, everybody liked him. He was clearly destined for great things. If I work for Alex and Alex is my boss and he's a great boss and, you know, maybe I'm just an engineer like you and I are from school. And I ask Alex one day, I said, you know, I'm pretty sure, you know, he's doing well. I can tell he's going to get promoted. And I say, you know, I've kind of thought that maybe, you know, I got to tell you, you've inspired me to think that maybe I could be a manager. And I say, but I got to ask you, what do you think makes you a good manager? And Alex says, oh, Mark, that's easy. I'm friendly. I'm cheerful. I like talking to people. I like building relationships. I'm an outgoing guy. I like mixing it up in meetings and so on. And, you know, I like listening to people. I like talking to people. Well, Alex Gorsky has just convinced me that I can't be a manager because I'm just an engineer. I'm not him. What he's telling me is it's his personality that makes him effective. And I don't have that personality. And frankly, I would argue that a great many managers and their directs believe in the myth of the personality manager. And it actually helps the manager feel like he or she is special because they're particularly gifted with people or whatever. But it leaves out of the equation all those people, basically half the people in the world, that don't naturally have that kind of style. Look, you need to be able to share what you do and how and why you do it with your team. Because if you can't train your replacement, first of all, you reduce your internal mobility because you're irreplaceable. And your boss or her boss has to look around for the person who would replace you as opposed to it coming from your team. And that means whoever takes over your team won't know your team.
Yeah. You want to take care of your team? Make sure you have a replacement.
Yeah. And it also, you're also contributing to some internal management talent friction. And we want, as much as possible internally, organizations, a relatively, almost completely frictionless talent market. We want people to be able to, we want anytime, the CEO wants at any time the ability to pick up any manager and put him or her in another spot and to have somebody else step into them as if nothing ever changed. But that is not, in fact, what internal talent markets are. And a big part of the reason is because managers don't know what their jobs are. No offense, guys, I'm not attacking you. I felt this way too. The reason Horseman and Company started, the reason manager tools exists is because the average manager doesn't know this stuff. And when I found out that nobody knew, that I wasn't alone, I said, well, we're going to start gathering data and we're going to tell people what it takes so that they don't have to feel alone. So they don't have to feel, you know, adrift. So they don't have to say, well, I hope what I did this week worked. I hope what I did was good. But the average manager, the vast majority of managers, in fact, have no externally teachable or even communicable set of behaviors that they repeatedly engage in. They don't have touchstones if you're not a manager tools manager. Now, look, I'm not saying that none of us have rules of thumb for dealing with certain situations. Most of us do. But the data show that the vast majority of managers don't have teachable, repeatable, measurable behavior sets to address the four most powerful behaviors managers can engage in, right?
Right.
And so when that personality-based manager talks about her personality, when Alex tells me, Mark, I'm just a people person, which he is, you know, I learned that I don't have the right temper to be a good manager, which
you're done.
Of course,
yeah, you're done. Might as well quit now, right?
Yeah. And you know what? And so my interest in getting ahead. Now, this isn't a requirement, folks. You don't have to want to get ahead. You can be, you know, as the saying goes, you can bloom where you're planted and stay there within reason. You can't stay flat. You have to continue to grow as your role and the organization grows. But the problem is when you tell me that, now I feel like I'm adrift again. I can't grow here. And so I'm a little less focused, a little less committed to everything because previously I assumed that some of the benefit that I was going to get was a deferred benefit. The hard work I was doing had some deferred benefit associated with it, which is I might get promoted someday. I didn't really quite know how, but you know, nobody ever told me. No company actually says, by the way, here's our process. It's not hard to share the process. I don't know why HR is so secretive about everything, but they are. Oh, no, we couldn't tell them the process. Yeah, that's because there really isn't a process. And at any given time, some senior executive comes in and says, I don't care what your process is. This is what we're doing. Yeah, it's frustrating. But I now suddenly am part of my benefit for doing what I do, the deferred benefit of future growth in my career is lost because I don't have the right temperament. And here's the thing. Temperament doesn't matter. That's the point we're making, guys. Your personality is not important to us as managers. The data says it doesn't matter. The data doesn't say being friendly and cheerful makes you a better manager. Management boils down to behavior. It's not your personality. It's not whether you're an engineer or a salesperson or a marketing person or outgoing or reserved. It's not whether you like email or don't like email. It's not whether you prefer data or don't prefer data. The question for you as a manager is how do you behave? And behaviors are teachable. Now, you may decide that you don't want to engage in those behaviors. That's fine. But it's all behavior. So this idea of temperament is it's a scourge. People think, oh, look, all the managers are the same. Well, that company probably believes that it takes that kind of temperament to be a manager. And you know what? I'll tell you when you'll know that an organization got it wrong. When you notice that there are a lot of frontline managers who are outgoing, cheerful, friendly people persons, and then we go through a downturn, and those people aren't ready, and they haven't built their lifeboat, and they're not, you know, they don't have their sandbags in place and so on, and they all lose their minds, and there's not a coordinated response to the downturn, and there's no race, don't chase, and it's usually messy.
Hey, dude, I think that's a great place to stop now. This is, we knew this was going to go long. So let's stop here and continue on next week. So thanks, everyone. And we'll see you next week. Have a great one.